It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
France reaffirms its support for its participation in airstrikes against Islamic State targets in Iraq. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. French lawmakers Tuesday approved extending French participation in airstrikes against Islamic State militants in Iraq just a week after three men who claimed allegiance to extremist Islamic groups killed 17 people in Paris. France is one of several European and Mideastern countries that have joined a U.S.-led coalition against the IS group, which overran parts of Syria and Iraq last year. Meanwhile, families and colleagues of three French police officers killed in last week's Paris attacks pay their final respects Tuesday.
À vous, famille, proche. Je vous assure que la
French President François Hollande stood before flag-draped coffins, praising their heroism, granting the officers posthumously the nation's prestigious Legion of Honor Award. Funerals were also held in Jerusalem for four Jewish victims of last week's attacks. Uganda says a top Lord's Resistance Army commander captured last week will be handed over to the International Criminal Court, an army spokesman saying that Dominic Ongwen will be transferred to The Hague by authorities in Central African Republic, where he turned himself in January 6. The LRA is accused of killing and kidnapping thousands over the past 30 years, first in an uprising against the Ugandan government, then as a roving band of fighters in Congo, South Sudan, and CAR. Marie Harf is a U.S. State Department spokesperson.
All parties have agreed that Ongwen should face justice for his alleged crimes, and we commend the governments of the Central African Republic and Uganda for their collaboration and cooperation in this process.
Ongwen, one of five LRA leaders charged by the ICC with war crimes and crimes against humanity, the rights group Enough Project says he was kidnapped by the LRA as a child in 1990. This is VOA News. The United States has added to its official terrorism list the leader of the Pakistani Taliban, which claimed credit for last month's assault on a Pakistani school that killed dozens. The State Department Tuesday named Maulana Fazlullah as a specially designated global terrorist, a label meant to target terrorists and those providing support to terrorists or acts of terrorism. The designation makes it a crime for U.S. citizens to engage in transactions with him. It allows the U.S. government to seize any of his assets in the U.S., including those under control of U.S. citizens. President Obama has called for new cybersecurity legislation to promote greater information sharing between the government and private sector.
It includes liability protections for companies that share information on cyber threats. It includes essential safeguards to ensure that government protects privacy and civil liberties, even as we're doing our job of safeguarding America's critical information networks.
Mr. Obama said it's now too hard sometimes for the two sides to exchange information because of legal and liability issues and companies' concerns about revealing their own vulnerabilities. The president's push comes a day after hackers attacked the Twitter and YouTube accounts of U.S. Central Command, which oversees U.S.-led airstrikes on IS insurgents in Iraq and Syria. The hackers said they were loyal to the IS group. An Egyptian appeals court says ousted President Hosni Mubarak and his two sons will get a retrial in the embezzlement case that earned them multi-year sentences last year. The court in Cairo announcing its decision Tuesday, a move that rolls back the only remaining conviction against Mr. Mubarak. Judicial sources say Mr. Mubarak, currently detained at a military hospital, could be freed at some point. A lower court found the former Egyptian leader and his two sons guilty in May, saying they embezzled some $17 million in funds to be used to renovate presidential palaces. The UN will host talks in Geneva today between the warring factions in Libya. The go-between will be the UN envoy to Libya and UN Secretary General's Special Representative, Bernardino Leon. The North African country has been in turmoil since the 2011 uprising that toppled dictator Muammar Gaddafi. Pope Francis was highlighting the need for justice, healing, and unity in Sri Lanka, where he arrived Tuesday for the start of a week-long trip to Asia.
It is no easy task to overcome the bitter legacy of injustices, hostility, and mistrust left by the conflict.
The Pope said Sri Lanka needs to pursue the truth of what happened during its long civil war. Rebuilding must include a respect for human rights and the full inclusion of each member of society. Pope Francis will spend 2 days in Sri Lanka before heading to the Philippines. Wednesday, he will hold a seaside mass in the capital, Colombo, to canonize the country's first saint, 17th-century missionary Joseph Vaz. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. CDC says progress is being made in the fight against Ebola in West Africa, but the fight is far from over.
If a year ago we had had surveillance systems in the forest region where the disease emerged, it's quite possible that we could have responded quickly and ended the outbreak before so many lives and so much devastation happened.
Dr. Tom Frieden is director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A new study predicts Ebola could come to an end in Liberia by June this year. Infighting rocks Nigeria's ruling party in the country's oil-rich states, and Burkina Faso's parliament cuts its own salary by 50%, but civil society groups want more cuts.
We agree that the state expenses should be cut off, but it has to be done by all the institutions of the state, from the president of the republic, the government, all the ministries, the parliament, and even the judiciary.
Issaka Traore is a member of RISO Barke, a network of youth organizations in Burkina Faso. Protesters gave Malawi's government a 100-day ultimatum to address their concerns. And IGAD welcomes the appointment of Somalia's new cabinet. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the battle against Ebola in West Africa is making progress, but Dr. Tom Frieden says the battle is nowhere near finished. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports.
This has been a devastating epidemic, and it's been unique. It is the world's first epidemic of Ebola, and it has stretched the world's systems and taught us what more we need to do.
At a meeting Tuesday on Capitol Hill, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Tom Frieden reminded people the epidemic that started in Guinea about a year ago could have been prevented if the countries were better prepared.
If a year ago we had had surveillance systems in the forest region where the disease emerged, it's quite possible that we could have responded quickly and ended the outbreak long ago before so many lives and so much devastation happened.
In recent weeks, the number of new cases per day has dropped into the single digits in Liberia and Sierra Leone compared to 30 or 40 a few weeks ago. But Dr. Frieden says the affected countries are still not out of the woods, especially Guinea.
Guinea has come close to controlling it on two different occasions, and maybe they got a little bit lax. They dropped the ball a bit, and it came roaring back. That importance of following every single case until we get to zero is absolutely essential.
He says as long as there is a single case in West Africa, the risk of exporting the disease to other countries continues. Congressional Global Health Caucus co-chair Betty McCollum says the bulk of the anti-Ebola effort needs to focus on prevention.
We need to work together internationally to set up better global surveillance, not just for when it's happening or after it's happening, but before it happens, right? We live in an interconnected world.
House Foreign Affairs Committee for Africa, Global Health and Global Human Rights ranking Democrat Karen Bass says the crisis continues even if it no longer dominates the daily news.
We watched Ebola become a major crisis in the United States. And like everything, when something leaves the headlines, we all know that that doesn't mean that the crisis is gone. It also doesn't mean that things aren't getting better.
So far, there have been 21,170 reported Ebola cases in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, and 8,371 people have died. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
A new study says Ebola could come to an end in Liberia by June this year if the trend toward better hospitalization and preventive care continues. The study, published in the journal PLOS Biology, looked at factors such as the location of infection and treatment, the development of hospital capacity, and the adoption of safe burial practices. John Drake is a professor in the Odom School of Ecology at the University of Georgia and lead author of the study. He said the study looked at how the various interventions that have been put in place affect the transmission of the Ebola virus.
As you know, transmission has declined greatly in Liberia, and I think that is due to the efforts of these organizations and the resolve of the Liberian people in order to comply with the policies on treatment, patient isolation, and dignified and safe burial of the deceased. We developed a computer model, and our initial aim was to estimate the level of intervention that would be required for containment to occur. And ultimately, we used that model to project what the future of that epidemic would look like.
This is a scientific model, or is this a realistic model? Can people in Liberia say, yes, come June, Ebola might come to an end?
Ebola might come to an end. It will require continued vigilance and watchfulness on the part of the government and health minister. It will require continued willingness by the people of Liberia to participate in the counterinfection measures that have been taken so far. But I think there's a good chance that it can be eliminated or at least reduced to very low levels by the middle of next year.
So you look at factors such as you mentioned location of infection and treatment. Talk to me about the location of infection, treatment, and the development of hospital capacity. How did that impact this study?
There are, as you probably know, many models developed by different academic and government groups used to project future cases of Ebola in West Africa. Our model is not unique, but it is special in that it accounts for transmission that might occur in hospitals or other healthcare settings separately from transmission that occurs in the community, whether that's through nursing care provided by family members or at funerals or in practices associated with the burial of the deceased. So when infection control is not in place in a healthcare setting, then hospitals are a place where a large amount of transmission can occur, and that puts healthcare workers at particular risk. Then it becomes important, where do persons who become infected go for treatment? And we know that some people prefer not to be treated in a hospital or Ebola treatment unit, possibly because they're scared that if they don't in fact have an infection with Ebola, that they might acquire it there, or for other personal reasons. But from a public health point of view, that's really unsafe. And so the willingness of persons that suspect they may be infected with Ebola to report to the authorities and allow themselves to be admitted to Ebola treatment unit is really key to containing the outbreak and breaking the chains of transmission that result in subsequent infection.
John Drake is a professor in the Odom School of Ecology at the University of Georgia and lead author of this study. He was speaking with me from the southern U.S. city of Athens, Georgia. Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party, the PDP, has long enjoyed strong support from states in the country's oil-producing south, but disputes among ruling party members may hurt its chances in next month's elections. Chris Stein reports from Abuja.
The ruling People's Democratic Party is a force to be reckoned with in the Niger Delta region. President Goodluck Jonathan won more than 90% of the vote in the 2011 presidential election in states like Rivers, Delta, Bayelsa, and Akwa Ibom. But in some states in the Niger River Delta, aspiring politicians say they feel the People's Democratic Party has shortchanged them. In Delta State, candidates who were upset that they were passed over for the PDP nomination have joined opposition parties. The defections could undermine PDP chances next month in one of its main strongholds. The party is already facing a strong challenge from a recently founded opposition coalition, the All Progressives Congress. Its candidate, former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari, is expected to pose a stiff challenge to Mr. Jonathan in next month's polls. Assistant editor Oyedi Onoredi of the Isoko Sun newspaper in Delta State says the PDP could face an insurrection from aggrieved political aspirants.
Yes, they will walk behind the scene for the other party. They may even show loyalty to PDP so that the party will not sanction them. But at the back, they will work to frustrate those candidates. That is what I envisage. But in the front, they will show that they are loyal to the party.
A PDP local organizer in Delta State, Henry Apori, says the party has set up a reconciliation committee to mend fences between the party and its disgruntled former members.
Those people that have left, or maybe some are still threatening to leave, I tell you, before the election time, thank God we have enough months to election. The reconciliatory committee will reach out to all of them, and I know they will all come back to the party because they are all stakeholders. They've labored for the party. They cannot dump the party at this 11th hour.
Nigerians vote for president on February 14th. The People's Democratic Party has won every presidential election in Nigeria since 1999. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
Today's Wednesday, January 14th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. A civil society leader in Burkina Faso has welcomed a decision by members of that country's parliament to cut their salaries by 50% from nearly $4,000 per month to about $2,000. The vice president of the National Transitional Council, which was put in place after mass protests drove President Blaise Compaoré out of office, said the council was responding to the wishes of the people. But Issaka Traoré, a member of Rusek Bake, a network of youth organizations in Burkina Faso, said the salary cut should have affected all government institutions.
I think it's a good thing that the parliament decided to cut off their own pay. But one of the biggest arguments that was put up is that we need to cut off the government expenses because there is no money in the country. And instead of asking the world state to decrease the payment and the expenses, people are just focusing on the parliament. And to me, I said this is a very, very unfair to behave that way.
Issaka, first of all, is it true that the members of parliament, that they are making at least $3,675 per month?
Yes. The thing is, this law is something that was applied to all the parliaments that were in Burkina Faso since 1992. When they came in as a parliament that went into the parliament with from an uprising, they discussed among themselves, should we keep this law? That way, MP should be receiving this amount of pay. Shall we change the payment system? I know that the president of the parliament and some other people asked to cut off the payment. And some people within the same parliament said no. And most of those who were supporting this last solution are the ones who won in the first time in December. But somehow, this information was leaked out from the parliament to the public opinion, and people start complaining.
This is a big problem in other countries in Africa where you have the majority of the people are poor and a few people in government are making more money.
Right now, with this transition, they only receive 10 million CFA for settlement, and they all have an average monthly pay more than $3,000. No one is complaining about that. You have civil society people who are their friends or their members of some civil society organizations, ministers of this government of transition, who receive 10 million for doing nothing. You know, this is your first day in cabinet. You have been given 10 million CFA to settle in. At the end of the month, you receive more than $3,000 as a monthly pay. In addition to that, you have a car with fuel. Your wife has a car with fuel. Your kids have a car with fuel. All the people in the civil society organization, we agree that the state expenses should be cut off. But it has to be done by all the institutions of the state, from the president of the republic, the government, all the ministries, the parliament, and even the judiciary body. We have to cut off all the expenses. It shouldn't be only the parliament to cut off the expenses. This is the big problem we have now.
Issaka Traoré is a member of Rusek Bake, a network of youth organizations in Burkina Faso. He was speaking with me from the capital, Ouagadougou. Human rights groups in Malawi have given the government a 100-day deadline to respond to issues raised in a petition presented after protest on Tuesday. The protest, among other issues, aimed to force local organizations to return about $100,000 that they received from the Malawi National AIDS Commission for activities not linked to HIV/AIDS. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Three organizations accepted the money. Beautify Malawi Trust, which belongs to the First Lady Gertrude Mutalika, a cultural group Mlakoa Lomwe, and the National Intelligence Bureau. The groups have been refusing to refund the money, saying they did not force the National AIDS Commission to give it to them. But rights groups said there was no way the AIDS Commission could have turned down the group's request for funding because the organizations are tightly connected to the ruling party leadership. A spokesman for the organizers of Tuesday's protest, Timothy Ntambo, told reporters that along with the refunding the money, the demonstrators have other issues they want the government to address.
We want the government to set up a platform of dialogue of all of us. We are lovers of dialogue. We have always wanted to engage the government, so we want that to be done. We have also said clearly that we want to start seeing serious progress on all those issues within 100 days.
Ntambo said the issues include the reform of some electoral laws and a stop to ruling party propaganda being aired over the state-run Malawi Broadcasting Corporation. They also want the government to fire board members of the National AIDS Commission within 3 weeks for failing to discharge their duties by careless displacement of money meant for HIV/AIDS activities. Ntambo said rights groups will take unspecified action should the government fail to address the concerns. The idea of demonstrations had earlier received stiff opposition from Malawi government authorities and some NGOs who feared it would result in the destruction of property and deaths, as was the case during the 2011 anti-government protests in which 20 protesters were killed by police. But Ntambo said during the Tuesday's demonstrations, the police behaved professionally.
The police have conducted themselves in a very professional manner and would like to advise them to continue because they are in their offices to promote and protect human and people's lives.
In the capital, Lilongwe, the protesters sang anti-government slogans as they peacefully marched to the city council offices to present their petition. Similar peaceful demonstrations also took place in the northern city of Nzuzu and Kalonga district in the northern Malawi. Public officers who received the petitions assured the protesters that they would deliver them to the office of the president and cabinet in time for action. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The East African Regional Group, IGAD, has cautiously welcomed the announcement of Somalia's new cabinet by Prime Minister Omar Abdirashid Shamaki. Mohamed Abdi Afe, the special envoy of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development of Somalia, says the final judgment on whether the new cabinet is effective or not will be made by the Somali people. Nevertheless, he says the Somali parliament will endorse the new cabinet.
Well, first of all, as an organization, we congratulate the Prime Minister for having come up with a cabinet. And we hope that the Parliament, which is expected to endorse this cabinet list, is going to do its constitutional duty by determining the fate of that cabinet. But we welcome the move by the Prime Minister, and we hope that a final decision can be reached as soon as possible so that we can get a cabinet that can be able to engage us and the international community and work for the Somali people.
There were mixed reactions to the appointment of the new cabinet. What is the opinion of IGAD? Do you think this cabinet can take the country forward?
You know, we have no opinion about which cabinet can take a country's programs forward or not. It's a sovereign right of Somali leadership to establish a cabinet that they think can work for the country. The role we have is to support. But the final judgment about how a cabinet is effective or not is a judgment that can be reached by the Somali people and the Somali government. For us, we have no opinion about the effectiveness or non-effectiveness of any cabinet until we see how it works. And our opinion will be based on what the Somalis think of it. So generally, the mixed reactions that you hear is a mixed reaction by the Somali citizens, and they are entitled to it. But for us, we hope that this cabinet is going to fulfill the mandate expected of it and will work with it in order to fulfill that mandate.
The country, Somalia, has been crippled by political differences in particular between the president and the prime minister. We have had the third prime minister within 2 years now. IGAD has been to Mogadishu this week. What's your understanding? Do you think that this prime minister and the president can last until 2016 without further political tension?
Actually, if you look at the communique released by the Council of Foreign Ministers in Mogadishu, the ministers have emphasized the need for political stability to 2016, and we hope that the team, the president and the prime minister, can work together and ensure that this stability is maintained. So it's our hope and prayer that we have a team that can continue to find a good working relationship that can move the country forward.
Mohamed Abdi Afe is the special envoy of IGAD to Somalia. He was speaking with Harun Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Twenty-5 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Equatorial Guinea football fans will receive 40,000 tickets to watch Orange Africa Cup of Nations matches, the country's head of state, Teodoro Obiang Nguema, disclosed in Malabo on Monday night. President Nguema declared on national television that he would purchase the tickets and have 10,000 tickets distributed at each of the four stadiums hosting the Nations Cup. His desire is to see fans fill the stadium during the competition. The contest will be staged in Malabo, Bata, Ebebiyin and Mongomo. Meanwhile, in a spirit of solidarity, the government of Gabon has donated 20 luxury buses to complement the Nations Cup Organizing Committee's transport fleet. The three-week contest starts on Saturday. Elsewhere, cyclists from 20 countries in Africa and Europe are vying for glory when the Tour of Egypt gets underway in Hurghada today, Wednesday. The five-day contest starts and ends at the Red Sea Resort. Meanwhile, judokas from 37 countries across Africa and Asia converge in the Tunisian capital Tunis for the two-day Africa Open Judo Championship starting on Saturday. The contest is a qualifier for the World Championships in Kazakhstan in August and the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. In athletics, 20-year-old Kenyan Andrew Mangata won the Valagarina International Cross-Country Race in Italy. Little-known but promising Ugandan teenager Robert Chemonges was runner-up ahead of another Kenyan, Daniel Ngeno. Finally, the American city of Boston will bid to host the 2024 Olympics and Paralympics. The United States Olympic Committee Chairman Larry Probst disclosed in Boston, Massachusetts, States, USA. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says he remains very confident the Ebola outbreak that has devastated West Africa can be stopped. Speaking at a meeting with public health officials and lawmakers on Tuesday in Washington, Dr. Tom Frieden said the world will get to zero cases in the epidemic if we continue the way we are going and nothing unexpected happens. He said the largest single risk health officials face is that the disease may become endemic. Uganda says a top Lord's Resistance Army commander captured last week will be handed over to the International Criminal Court. Ugandan Army spokesman Paddy Ankunda said in a Twitter message on Tuesday that Dominic Ongwen will be tried at the ICC in The Hague. And an Egyptian appeals court says ousted President Hosni Mubarak and his two sons will get a retrial in the embezzlement case that earned them multi-year sentences last year. The court in Cairo announced its decision on Tuesday, a move that rolls back the only remaining conviction against Mr. Mubarak. That is it for this Wednesday, January 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte, wishing all of you a good day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 60-80 kilohertz, and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.